All right, good morning, everyone. So let's continue today, Mirtz Hashem, in Tehillim. We find ourselves in Perek Mem Vav. And we're probably going to be focusing on this particular kapitel both this week and next. I think next week is our last class before Pesach. So we'll be focusing on this kapitel for the remainder of this semester, we'll call it. And we're going to try both this week and next week to try to tie in elements of this particular kapitel to Pesach, to the Haggadah, so that we're able to see again a little bit of David HaMelech's understandings and insights, but through the spectrum or through the prism of Pesach. So let's begin with number one. So kapitel chapter 46, kapitel Membav, Lam Natzeach Livnei Korach Al Alamos Shir. So remember again, as many times we've spoken about, Lam Natzeach for the conductor. Of course, David HaMelech writes Tehillim to be sung by the Levitic choir. David HaMelech wanted more than anything to be able to build the Beis HaMikdash, to be able to build the temple. Kadosh Baruch Hu tells him that he can't, for a variety of different reasons, not our topic for this morning. But God tells him that he is not to build the temple. So King David does two things. Number one, what does he do? He purchases the land. That's number one, meaning he purchases the threshing floor of Aravna HaYevusi, which again was, if you could imagine, by the way, in the times of David HaMelech, so the temple mount, what we call the Harabayis, was somebody's house. Somebody's house. So can you imagine? Somebody's living. I mean, it's an incredible piece of property. Right? Mamish overlooks all of Yerushalayim. It overlooks the valley. It's quite beautiful. So the guy by the name of Aravna was living there. He was a Jebusite. He was a Yevusi. He was living there. So David HaMelech says, you know what? If I can't build the Beis HaMikdash, at least what I'm going to do is I'm going to purchase the site. I'll put up the big sign. Here is the future site of the Temple of God. And at least that's my contribution. That was number one. Number two is he arranged the music for the Beis HaMikdash. It's an interesting thing because for us, so music doesn't play as dominant of a role in prayer, in tefillah. But that's a result of not having a Beis HaMikdash for 2,000 years. In the Beis HaMikdash, music was a major part of Avodah, of service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There was the Levitic choir, there was instruments. In fact, again, the Gemara says, the Rambam paskins, the Rambam holds this way as well, which is that if you offer up karbanos without shira, without Levitic song, one does not fulfill their karbanic obligation, which is an incredible idea. Prayer or service of God without music, without heart, without feeling, without passion, without emotion, is not service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So David HaMelech therefore writes the various chapters of Psalms, and he tells us, remember, often throughout the Psalms, he tells us what note to use, what instrument to use, who should sing it. So Lam Natzeach for the conductor of Korach, we've spoken about, again, the children of Korach many times as well. Remember, again, when we say the name, or when we see the name Korach, so it sends a little bit of a shiver down our spine because there's such a terrible association. Korach led the worst rebellion against Jewish leadership. He led the rebellion against Moshe Rabbeinu. But yet we know that his children, his offspring, were righteous. And not only that, but they were amongst the most prominent Levitic families. So Lam Natzeach for the conductor, the children of Korach, Al Alamos Shir. So again, if you'll notice, it says a song of Alamos Shir, an Alamos song. And I purposely left that word undefined because you're going to focus on it a little bit over the course of today's Shir. In Pasuk Beis, verse 2, Elokim, Lanu Machase, Va'oz Ezra B'tzaros Nim Sama'od. God is for us a shelter and a strength, a help in troubles. He is very accessible. Pasuk Gimel, Al Kain Lonira Bahamir Eretz. Therefore, we will not fear when the earth changes and when the mountains totter into the heart of the seas. Yehemu pasuk dalit, verse 4. Yehemu yechmeru meimav yirashu harim begaavaso sela. His waters shall stir and be muddied. Mountains shall quake from his pride forever. Nahar plagav yismuchu ir elokim kedosh mishkenei elyon. But as for the river, its rivulet shall cause the city of God, the holy place of dwellings of Most High, to rejoice. Elokim bikirba baltimot ya'azreha elokim lifnos boker. God is in its midst, that it shall not totter. God shall help it as morning approaches. And he goes on, the kapitel goes on. This basic theme that David HaMelech is expressing in this kapitel is what? What's the basic theme? God's accessible, God's strong, good. What else? Remember, if you look at the imagery in this particular chapter, the imagery that David HaMelech is putting forward is instability. instability. The mountains are shaking, the earth is shaking, the nations are shaking. Everything in life is unstable except for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So this, by the way, we've seen this theme throughout Sefer Tehillim already. This is why David HaMelech was, Moshe Rabbeinu already does this, but David HaMelech continues on this theme, where David HaMelech calls HaKadosh Baruch Hu Tzur. He calls him a rock. Moshe Rabbeinu does that in Sefer Devarim as well. Why the imagery of God as a rock? What's the message of HaKadosh Baruch Hu being a rock? So remember, again, we've spoken about this before. The rock represents stability. The incredible thing about the relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is that it represents an anchor. You know, the greatest difficulty of life is... I know, this is a very open, very open-ended question. The greatest difficulty, if we're honest in life, you could condense all of life's difficulties into one word, and that is uncertainty. Uncertainty. Right? You know, there's the famous Arizal. The Arizal brings down, he says that, why is it that people cry at a wedding? He actually talks about a wedding. And it's not just the wedding, by the way. It's why is it that tears are the natural reflexive reaction to acute joy. It's so strange, right? It's so strange that the reflexive reaction to acute joy is tears. Tears normally represent sadness. And the Ari says something amazing. The Ari says, because a person realizes deep down in their neshama, in the midst of incredible joy, I don't know how long this will last. I don't know how long I'll be able to actually hold on to this. Meaning there's a recognition, although we don't like to articulate it, that life is so uncertain. And now I'm in the midst of incredible simcha. What's going to happen the next hour? What's going to happen the next day? What's going to happen the next year? I don't know. And by the way, that sounds morose. I'm not suggesting you share this with someone like at a simcha, but it's not morose. It's real. It's real. You see, I just want to go on a commercial break for just a moment over here. You see, society tries to tell us that we're always supposed to be happy. Right? And if you're not always happy, there's some medication that'll work for you. Or if you're not always happy, there's something you should do. You should talk to someone. You should take something. Who ever filled our head with this idea that you're always supposed to be happy? Now, the truth is, we spoke about this a few weeks ago. Rabbi Nachman said it. Rabbi Nachman, he says, simcha means something very different. Happiness, remember, that's it. Judaism doesn't define happiness by a big smile on your face. Judaism defines happiness by a feeling of contentment. Knowing that I'm living a purposeful life, that's happiness. Meaning, a thinking person, if a person chooses to bury their head in the sand, yes, you can be happy about everything. Because as long as life is going your way, you have a little bit of money in your pocket, some food in the pantry, you're good. But a thinking person realizes that I know that life could change. I know that life could change in a moment. And the truth is, that's not a morose feeling. It's an empowering feeling. Because if I know that life could change any moment, what that does is it pushes me to maximize the moments I have. It's the same way, by the way, you know, that Ramban brings down. He says that, you know, everyone thinks that the punishment for Adam and Chava when they ate from the Eitz Das Tovara was death. People think, says Ramban, that before they sinned, man was supposed to be immortal. The Ramban says immortality was never in the cards. Man was never supposed to be immortal. Why was man never? Immortality is always part of the design of humanity. Why? It's on a simple level. You know what your garage looks like now. Can you imagine what your garage would look like if you were immortal? Right? You know? So I'll get to it next Sunday. I'll get to it next year. So imagine if there was immortality. What life would look like. But on a deeper, more serious level, the fact that I know that life is a finite, non-renewable resource is what pushes me to maximize my life. It was what pushes me to maximize my moments. If I knew that I had immortality, no problem. I didn't get it done this century, not a big deal. There's always next one. I didn't get it done next one, I'll get it done in 2,000 years from now. Mortality is the greatest gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us. Because mortality is what lights the fire under us to be able to accomplish. What lights the fire under us to be able to do. So the Ramban says immortality was never. So therefore again, even this idea that when I'm in the midst of the simcha, there's a part of my soul that cries because I don't know how long I'll be able to hold on to it, is a good thing. Because if simcha was unending, then why the need to maximize it? Because it will come to an end. It inevitably will come to an end. And yes, there will even be tsar, there'll be sadness, there'll be difficulty, there'll be trials and tribulations somewhere down the road. It forces me to maximize my happiness now. Life is uncertain. The one sense of security we have in this world is the Ribono Shel Olam. God is the only fixture in our lives. Our relationships come and go. You know, and this is a little bit of a sobering thought. You know, people think that life is about their relationships. They think it's about their marriage, or they think it's about their children. The truth is, that's not what life is about either. Those things are very, very, very important. But those are not constants. Those are not constants. Relationships come and go. Come and go. The one thing that is a fixture in my life is the Ribono Shel Olam. That's the one thing that never changes. He's always been here, and he always will be here. It's the rock. It's the anchor of existence. So David HaMelech in this capital seems to be describing this dynamic. You know, the mountains, one time they're high, then the earthquake comes, it levels the mountain. The topography looks one way, then the earthquake comes, it looks a little bit differently. The rivers at first run this direction, then they run a different direction. Nations that are strong seem to fall. Ribono Shel Olam, David HaMelech says, I've seen everything in life. And one conclusion I've come to is everything changes, with one exception. That's you. That's you. And so David HaMelech says, you know, the one way, and again, for many people, the uncertainty of life is a cause of incredible anxiety, because people like to be in control. That's all people. And by the way, that's not a bad thing. That's why you find sometimes when people are faced with circumstances they can't control, they grab back control in all different interesting ways. So sometimes you'll find someone who is suffering with significant illness. And what will they do? They'll become manic about cleaning their house. So you wonder, like, what is the connection between cleaning my house and terminal illness? So what's the answer? I could control how clean the kitchen is. I could control that. So people, and again, if you ask a person why they're doing it, a person won't even necessarily make the association. But people do this in all kinds of ways. When I'm faced with a situation that I can't control, and it's literally staring me in my face, that I don't have control, we reflexively grab back control in so many different ways to try to steady the ship. The difference is that even if you could eat off the floor of my kitchen, it actually doesn't help me with the situation in life. Instead, what David HaMelech is suggesting is, when you are faced with the instability of the human condition, stabilize yourself with that which is truly a stabilizing force. And that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you bring the Ribono Shel Olam into your life, he's able to provide stability even when life has become exceptionally unstable. But what I really want to draw you, that's the theme, yes. Like the last 20 minutes? When you are faced with the instability of life, I don't remember exactly how I said it, but if you're faced with the instability of life, bring in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is the source of all stability. So that's the theme of the capital. That's the general theme of this chapter, and we'll focus more on that general theme next week. What I really want to focus on today is just the one word, alamos. Because if you notice, again, this is a very strange word. So what does it mean, lanatzeach l'nekar? So we understand 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 out of the 6 words in this capital. Lanatzeach, for the conductor, livne korach, children of korach, al, on, and shir, song. But I don't know what alamos. I don't know what alamos shir. What type of song are we referring to over here? So Rashi, HaKadosh, number 3 says, al alamos, al shem klei shir. So Rashi says, alamos is actually the name of an instrument. It says alamos refers to an instrument. Now remember, going back to what we said before, this actually makes a lot of sense. Why? Because King David often in Tehillim will go ahead and tell us, or will tell the Levitic choir, what instrument to use. So lamnatzeach, livnei korach, David says to the conductor, children of Korach, you guys who are leading the Levitic choir, al alamos shir. Use this instrument called alamos when you go ahead and you sing this particular song. Good. Number 4, the Radak has a different commentary. The Radak writes, Lamaseach livnei korach al alamos shir. Alamos kvar kasamnu shehu mishemos minei klei anigun. So the Radak agrees with Rashi that alamos is what? Alamos, again, is an instrument. So look what he writes. Gam ze hamizmor la'asid b'kibbutz golios al melchemes gog u magog. Says the Radak, says Radak, this kapitel is referring to what? This kapitel is referring to future messianic redemption, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to go ahead and bring us back to our Tzol Kibbutz Golios, and refers to the war of Gog Umagog. Now, we're not going to get too much into the war of Gog Umagog, but Gog Umagog essentially is the war at the end of days. I just want to point out, this is different than the Christian concept of Armageddon, different concept, even though it comes from the same word. But again, Gog Umagog is this ultimate showdown between good and evil before the arrival of Mashiach ben David. So before Mashiach ben David comes, the armies of good will be led by Mashiach ben Yosef. Remember, there are two Mashiachs. The first Mashiach, Mashiach ben Yosef, leads the armies of good, whatever this means. The armies of good in the war of Gog Umagog, Mashiach ben Yosef dies in the war of Gog Umagog, but the outcome of that war is that good vanquishes evil. And what comes out of the ashes of that war, which the Navi tells us is going to have incredible collateral damage, is Mashiach ben David. That's Davidic Messiah, comes from that war. So says the Radak, the imagery that David HaMelech is referring to over here, of the earth shaking, of the mountains shaking, of the rivers changing course, that's a result of the turbulent situation of the pre-messianic era. That's the war of Gog Umagog. But David HaMelech is saying, so what's the song? How can you sing about the war of Gog Umagog? Because what's the amazing part? Even through all the instability of Gog Umagog, even through the instability of the pre-messianic era, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, having God in our lives, provides us with a measure and a level of stability, even under Gog Umagog-like circumstances. And in fact, if you look at number 5, the Zera Yaakov writes the following, he says, Al Olamos, listen to this, he says, Olamos, that's a typo, I apologize, it's supposed to be Aleph Lamed Mem Vav Sof, Olamos, Rashi Tevos, Al Maves. So in fact, the Zera Yaakov writes that the word Olamos is a contraction, Al Maves, which means what? Dehainu sheyis alim v'yevula la'asid kimo shekasa bila ha'maves lanetzach. So Zera Yaakov actually writes that la'maseach livnei korach Al Maves is a song that David HaMelech is going to sing about the time that is above death. What is the time that is above death? That refers to the messianic era. Now again, I just want to point out, we're not going to get into a discussion about the messianic era. The Zera Yaakov is not suggesting that there's no death in the messianic era. What he's saying is, above death means a period of time above suffering. Like, Bila HaMavis LaNetzach, a time that death is swallowed up, that suffering is suffered up. So the Zera Yaakov is backing up the Radak's assertion that this is talking about the Moshe Mashiach messianic era, specifically, again, the war of Gog Umagog. Number 6, the Malbim has a different approach. The Malbim says something very interesting. He says, remember, as we've spoken about throughout our journey in Tehillim, one of the fascinating things in Tehillim is always to see what circumstances the particular chapter is talking about. Because remember, as we've come to see over our years studying Tehillim, virtually every chapter of Tehillim was written in response to some of, either in response or anticipation of some event. So you get into David HaMelech's mind when you understand what are the driving circumstances. So far we have the Radak, the Zera Yaakov. This is talking about the Messianic era, specifically the period before Messianic revelation, war of Gog Umagog, incredible time of upheaval and turbulence in the world. And David HaMelech saying that in the precursor to the time of Mashiach, there's going to be much upheaval. The earth is going to shake. The mountains are going to shake. But the one source of stability is the Ribono Shel Olam. The Malbim takes a totally different approach. The Malbim number 6 writes, "Lam Natzeach Lim Nekorach Mevur Me'inyar." This is fascinating. "Shenes Yaseid Al Shetef Ma'im Rabim Shahaya Az Be'eretz Surya." So the Malbim says something amazing. He says, "I think you guys are all thinking too deeply about this. In fact, you know what happened over here? There was major flooding in Syria. Major flooding." And I have to understand something. David HaMelech conquered. The size of Eretz Yisrael under David HaMelech extended past modern-day Syria. That was all Eretz Yisrael under David HaMelech's reign, even through Shlomo, pretty much up until the split of the kingdom. So what happens, says the Malbim? There was major flooding in Syria. Shahanar paratz es kidosov v'shataf medino. So it was a major flood. It sounds like a tsunami. The river overran its banks and flooded out many countries. V'hechariv arim rabin. And it destroyed many cities. V'sham shamos paratz. And it totally desolated the region. U'bahagiyah shataf v'aretz ha-kidosha. But then something miraculous occurred. When the flood waters reached Eretz Yisrael, lo hizik ma'uma. The floodwaters did not harm the land, our land, Eretz Yisrael, one bit. Mipnei kavod Hashem hashochim b'Yerushalayim, because of the honor, the glory of God that resides in Yerushalayim, asher lefanav hishtachavu b'nei elim ela b'hadras kodesh, kimo shesharak hazos lemala simchavtes uba'isahi. So again, so first of all, says the Malbim, the imagery, by the way, of the rivers flowing all over the place and the earth shaking and the mountains crumbling, the Malbim says, by the way, it's not a metaphor. It's not a metaphor. It's speaking about events that actually happened, some type of major flooding that emanated from the area of Syria, overtook communities all the way, but it came to Eretz Yisrael, and miraculously, the waters did not cause any damage. At that same time, says the Malbim, Uba'isahi hayaaretz echel mimalchi Syria, Margiz Mamlachos, the Kav Shachar Medinos Rabos, Vayasem part of the Ilachim Baris. And while this is all happening, one of the regional monarchs decided to take advantage of the mass confusion and started conquering land after land after land until he set his sights on Eretz Yisrael. Vishataf Hanar Avares Machaneu Klei Mechamto, Umizer Ra'u Ki Hashem Itam. But miraculously, at one point in time, the waters changed course and totally enveloped this king's army and his invading group. According to the Malbim, again, David HaMelech composed this particular capital because the people saw the act of salvation of God. They saw that the floodwaters did not invade the territories of Eretz Yisrael, and they saw this king who had conquered all the surrounding areas, was marching in Eretz Yisrael, was miraculously swallowed up by the floodwaters. So just a different interpretation. And finally, we come to number 7. Writes the Medrash. And what's interesting about the Medrash is I put it last, but you're going to see etymologically, it seems to be the most straightforward. So look what he writes. Zeu she'amar ha'kosov oseh gedolos ad incheker v'niflaos ad mi'in mispar. So in the Pasuk in Iyov says, Kadosh Baruch Hu does incredible things beyond comprehension. V'niflaos ad mi'in mispar. So we spoke about this Pasuk from the Rav a few weeks ago. And again, and his wondrous things without number. Ein adam yachol esaper gidulosa v'niflaos shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The truth is, it's impossible for a person to truly understand and to appreciate the great things that God does. V'chinu omer, lo'ose niflos gidolos levado, mahu levado. What does it mean when it says that God does incredible things by himself? What does it mean by himself? Mahu levado. Hu levado yodea masha oselecha. So because sometimes it's only HaKadosh Baruch Hu who knows what he's doing for me. Right? Sometimes only God knows. Only God knows the profundity and the depth of the goodness that he is bestowing me. I look at it as nature. I look at it as they say, magiali, right? I've earned it. It belongs to me. It's my right. It's my entitlement. Sometimes only HaKadosh Baruch Hu truly understands all of the good that he is bestowing upon us. So the Medrash writes, Kach b'nei Korach amru al alamos shir. Said the Medrash, this is the meaning of the phrase, Lam natseach livnei Korach, Al Alamos Shira. Song for Bnei Korach. What does it mean? Al Alamos. Look at the Medrash right. Last line, number 7. Me'ulamin hein hadvarim shera'inu. Literally, the things that we have seen, or that we should see, are hidden from us. Ve'ein anu yodin ma'ra'inu. Sometimes we see things, and we don't even realize what it is that we are seeing. Therefore, says the Medrash so beautifully, that's the meaning of the Pasuk. What are Bnei Korach? What are they singing about? Al Alamos Shir. We're singing about all of those things that are hidden. We're singing about all of those beautiful brachos that we receive each and every day that we're not even aware of. Either we're not aware of because a lot of times HaKadosh Baruch Hu does things behind the scenes that we benefit from that we never even see. Or sometimes there are things that are just staring us straight in the face. But because we see them every single day, we no longer look at them as miraculous. We no longer look at them as special. Therefore, again, the particular capital is singing a song, Al Alamos. Now, Alamos, the reason I say that the Medrash is most etymologically straightforward is because, again, remember, it's the Lashon of Ha'alam, of Ne'alam, of hidden. So they are singing about, Alamos, about the things that are hidden. And Rav Hirsch comments on this, and he says so beautifully, number 8, Al Alamos Shir are the secrets, the mysteries of life, that which is hidden to others and can be sensed only, I'm sorry, another typo, only by or only through the ecstasy of song. So this is such beautiful words So here Rav Hirsch says that what is this kapitel talking about? L'matzeach l'bnei Korach al alamos shir. Life is filled with alamos. Life is filled with things that are hidden. Life is filled with beautiful blessings that we just don't see. Again, sometimes because they happen behind the scenes, and sometimes because simply we're not wearing the right glasses. We don't have the right prescription. And says Rav Hirsch, sometimes the only time you could begin to perceive the brachos is through shira, is through song, is through what Rav Hirsch calls the ecstasy of songs. I was very intrigued by this notion of that sometimes you could only see the brachos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the ecstasy of songs. So let's develop this idea a little bit. And I want to develop this idea, or really understanding what the Medrash means about perceiving the hidden aspects of HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the Haggadah. So take a look at number 9. I don't want to get anybody nervous about Pesach. We're not going to talk about cleaning or anything, just the Haggadah. So look what the Haggadah writes. Again, so remember, the formal Haggadah, the formal Magid, really begins with the Manishtana. So remember, again, we ask at the Seder, Manishtana Allah is Amikol Alelos. So how is this night different from all of the nights? And we proceed to ask 4 questions. Question number one, every night, we eat chametz and matzah, leavened and unleavened products. Tonight, only matzah. Number 2, on all other nights, we eat all kinds of vegetables. Tonight, maror. All other nights, we dip. We don't even dip once. Tonight, we dip twice. A reference to karpas and a reference to maror. And then finally, on all other nights, we eat in whatever position we want to assume. Sitting, reclining. Tonight, everyone has to recline. Fine. Those are the 4 questions we're all familiar with. If you look in paragraph Beis in number 9, so then the next section is Avadim Hayinu. And we say, Avadim Hayinu leparo b'mitzrayim. We were servants to Paro in Egypt. God took us out from there with an outstretched hand, a strong arm. And if God would not have taken our ancestors out from Egypt, then we, our children, our grandchildren, would still be slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt. And even if we're all wise, we're all well-versed, we're all old, even if we know all of the Torah, there's a mitzvah to retell the Exodus narrative. And whoever tells over about the Exodus narrative is praiseworthy. What's the problem? It's not the answer to the questions. I just want to, just one thing, which is a very important thing to do. You know, sometimes when we're used to seeing certain texts year in and year out, so we lose certain analytical abilities. So one of the best things you could do if you're looking to prepare to have a meaningful Seder is open up the Haggadah and pretend like you're seeing it for the first time. And it's amazing to see how many different, not inconsistencies, but how many questions come up just regarding the flaw of the Haggadah. So it's a very simple idea. Child asks 4 questions, good, legitimate questions. The whole point of the Pesach Seder is Kadesh Yishalu, is to engage. This is some. We'll talk about this more. Sometimes people lose perspective on what the goal of the Seder is. The goal of the Seder, we'll see, is to make your children love Judaism, not resent it, because my parents kept me at the table until 2:00 in the morning. So we'll talk about that in greater depth. In any event, so we've got the 4 questions, and then we have a paragraph that is supposed to answer these questions, but does not. So what's the meaning of, so how is Avadim Ayinu an answer to Manishtana? So take a look at number 10. So this is from a beautiful sefer called Otzim Afarshei Haggadah, which essentially is like an encyclopedic Haggadah. So the person who put it together just took from a whole bunch of other Haggadahs and kind of took everything that's written on any particular subject and put it into one sefer. So he writes the following in paragraph A. Avadim Ayinu, Kasav HaRitva. So the Ritva was one of the Rishonim, one of the early commentaries on the Gemara. So he calls it the following: the Zeu Tchilas Haggadah Uchuvas Manishtana Lefi Sha'avadim Hayinu Lepar B'Mitzrayim Ladas Abu Draham Zohi Tshuva Al Tam Achilas Matzah V'Hamoror Lefi Sha'inu Avadim Leparo V'Al Kin Anu Ochlim Matzah U'Moror Ka'asher Ochluim. So the Abu Draham writes, look, Avadim Hayinu doesn't answer all of the questions, but at least it answers 2 of them. Right? What questions does it answer? It answers why we eat matzah and why we eat maror. Why do we eat matzah and maror? Because we were slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt. Therefore, to remember the servitude, we eat matzah, which was the bread that they ate not only upon emancipation, but also the bread they ate during servitude. And they also ate maror. Therefore, to remember the fact that we were slaves, we eat matzah and maror. If you turn the page, paragraph B. So he quotes over here, Yesh shosifu shebekach gam nesinas tshuva ala tam shanu misubim balayla hazeh. Others explain that avadim hayinu also answers why we recline. Why we recline? Ki avadim hayinu al kein ochle matza umara kasha achlu avosenu vechayovin anu la'amo behaseba v'derecherus kederech sha'amdu avosenu kishotzenu HaKadosh Baruch Hu misham biyad chazaka. So some say, no, Avadim Hayinu doesn't just answer why we eat matzah and mara because we were slaves, but what does Avadim Hayinu also discuss? That we were emancipated. Because we were emancipated, that's why we lean. That's why we recline. Because reclining is the behavioral, is the physical posture of free people. So we give physical form to our newfound freedom by leaning while sitting. V'yesh shekasvu, sha'ata mashivin rak al sheila sa'aseba shemechevet. Fine, let's get down to paragraph C. Al sheila sa'atibol in mashivin. But interestingly enough, the one question we do not address is about the dipping. Right? So the child asks, why on all the nights we don't dip at all, tonight we dip twice, so we don't answer that. Mipnei, and there's a good reason for that, which is why. Mipnei sheshnei atibulim no adu lo'oras atinokos lishol lefashar shinui. O mipnei shel'achrez ara mitzayne b'layla zeh eschiruseinu. So interestingly enough, because the reason we dip at the Pesach Seder is why, the Gemara says, there's actually no intrinsic meaning to it. It's just in order to get the children to ask. So once the child asks, it's very important. The goal is to trigger questions. Once the child asks, mission accomplished, and therefore, again, there's no further explanation given of an Avadim Hayinu. Paragraph D. Kasef ha'abar b'nel, shemeachar shetuchnon shal shelos manashtanuhu, madua balayla zeh na'asim dvarim hamorim ala avdus mechad, udvarim hamurim ala chirus mi'idach. See, interestingly enough, the Abar b'nel says, no, Avadim Hayinu does answer all the questions. Because what's the essence of the four questions of Manasseh? What's the essence of them? The essence is that the child is saying the Pesach Seder seems to be a contradiction. On one hand, we do things that represent servitude. On the other hand, we do things that represent freedom. So we dip. I don't know what dipping is, says a child, whatever way. We lean. Leaning seems to be a physical representation of freedom. But yet we eat matzah. Matzah is both freedom as well as servitude. We eat maror, which is servitude. So the child is asking, says the Abba Brunel, what are we doing tonight? What are we remembering? Are we trying to be like slaves? Or we're trying to be free? Because what we're going to do over the course of the Seder gives mixed messages about what the essence of the night is, to which the Abar Benel writes, Lefichach ha-tshuva hi, ki balayla ha-zeh b'tchilas avadim ha-yinu lepar mitzrayim, lachin na'aseh osam ha-morim ala avdus, u balayla ha-zeh b'sof ha-otsiyan ha-shem l'kinim misham, v'haynu b'nei chorin, left-hand paragraph, lachin na'aseh osam ha-dram ha-morim ala chirus, u lefish ha-layla ha-zeh mishuna b'dram. So what the Abar Benel answers, essentially, you tell the child, it's both. We begin the evening with a focus on servitude, and we try to create, at least in a simple behavioral way, those aspects of slavery that our ancestors suffered with for 210 years. But tonight we also celebrate that we went free. That's why some part of the night is devoted to reliving or reenacting servitude, and another part of the night is focused on reliving and reenacting emancipation. So it's not a contradiction. Instead, what is it? It's a continuum. So you see over here how Avadim Hayinu, in fact, does answer the questions of Manishtana, albeit in nuanced fashions. Perhaps the only question that remains unanswered from Avadim Hayinu is the tibul, is the dipping, which again, the Ritva and others posit, is purposely left unanswered, since again, it does not have an inherent meaning or intrinsic value, rather only serves as a trigger for our children's questioning. But I want to share with you another beautiful insight, and that's from number 11, Rabbi Nachman of Breslov. So Rabbi Nachman says something that is truly special. So the Rebbe writes the following. He says, paragraph A, Avadim leparam Mitzrayim, afa pishe mashivin leben avadim ayinu, v'chol sipur itzias Mitzrayim, afa pikein, bevadai ein ze teretz maspik leva'ar ulataritz b'shlemus, kolakush yoshal manishtana. So Rabbi Nachman asks our question, or we ask Rabbi Nachman's question, which is, I don't understand, my child is asking good questions. These are legitimate questions. Remember, these questions, just, you could, what we do essentially, is we spend the rest of the night answering these questions. We just do it over a prolonged period. So these are good questions. So Rabbi Nachman, why don't we answer them? Why don't we give, if the kid is asking the question, why not give them the derech eretz and the knowledge by answering the questions directly? Rabbi Nachman would say, it's very nice that you could show me how in Avodim Hayinu, there's a nuanced answer to each of the four questions of Manashtana. But why are we giving nuanced answers? Why don't we just answer the questions straight out? Why answer the question with a narrative of Avadim Hayinu, we were slaves, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out? Rabbi Nachman says something amazing. He says, third line in paragraph A, Ki lefi miyotzichleinu, adayin kasha kol dikduke emisles partayim shosim v'la say Pesach levad. So Rabbi says something amazing, because the truth is, we don't really understand why we do the things the way we do. We don't really understand the deeper meaning of the mitzvahs we do. And by the way, that's just on Pesach night. All the more so throughout the rest of the year, there are so many things in my Judaism that I don't understand. You know, there are so many things, by the way, that we do throughout the year that are zecher liyitzias mitzrayim. Everything is tied to the Exodus. Tefillin is tied to the Exodus. Kiddush is tied to the X. Everything is tied to the X. So, what's the connection? V'lama anu mechayavim davka l'tabel shtei pamim zeich l'yitzias Yisrael. And that's the Rebbe again. All roads lead back to Karpas. All roads lead back to the dipping. And why are we dipping? Why are we doing? What the Rebbe is saying is, we're such an organized, methodical religion. And we often find ourselves doing stuff like dipping potatoes in salt water. And it's great because it's late. Everybody's hungry. So nobody cares about the reason. Right? Everybody's just happy to have something to eat. But, you know, think about it just for a moment. Like, we don't have enough mitzvos that you've got to add in stuff that we don't understand. We have 630 mitzvos. There's more than enough to keep a Jewish person busy for multiple lifetimes. We got to add in potatoes and salt water. We got to start dipping things. We don't even know what we're doing. So this is something amazing. Listen to the discussion, says the Rebbe. And furthermore, chametz. Let's talk about chametz for just a moment, right? We make ourselves crazy, right, about chametz before Pesach. By the way, just as a commercial aside, we make ourselves too crazy preparing for Pesach and drains all of the joy out of Yom Tov. You do not have to move your refrigerator to find the Cheerio, unless, of course, you're the kind of person that normally eats Cheerios from under the refrigerator. If you do that, you should see me after the class anyway. But again, we go above and beyond and make ourselves crazy for absolutely no reason. It's not what the Ribbono Shel Olam had in mind. The fact that segments of the Jewish people, you know, that Pesach is anxiety-provoking is terrible. It's terrible. And if Pesach is anxiety-provoking, I urge you to please reach out to your Rav, because then you're doing it wrong. If it's anxiety provoking, you're not saying it's not busy. It's very busy, but so is preparing for a simcha. Many things are busy. If it's anxiety provoking, and when you hear the word Pesach, it sends shivers, I'm telling you, you're doing something wrong. And you should seek out someone who you trust to help reformulate and recreate your understanding and your appreciation of this Yom Tov. Or go away. One of those two things. So Rabbi Nachman says the following. So Rabbi Nachman says, he says, so what's going on? So chametz mashu. We do all this crazy stuff, right? So chametz, we turn ourselves inside out. I'm checking my pockets. I'm doing this. Why? Because literally on Pesach, I can't have a speck. You know, what's interesting is the following. If you're preparing for Shabbos, and a drop of milk falls into your chicken soup, what's the halacha? Spatal b'shishim, right? Again, assuming you have 60 times more soup than milk, you're good. And by the way, not only are you good, you're totally fine. Not to throw out the soup. The halacha says you can eat the soup. It's Pesach and a little piece of cake of a Cheerio falls into my soup. What happens? Doesn't matter if it's a speck. The whole soup is usher. Not only is the soup usher, the kalim, the utensils are problematic. You're done. I mean, for the soup, you're not done. It's a little different. Right? The soup is done. Why? Why? I don't understand. If a little piece of chazer, if a little piece of pork falls into my chalent, and there's 60 times more chalent, the chalent's still kosher, and that's mamish, like that's tarfus. And a Cheerio, which is good, 51 weeks out of the year, falls into my bowl of soup, I'm done, mamish, I'm done. Why? Why, sir? I mean, how should I understand this? He goes on. And if you want to tell him, because the Jews left Egypt so quickly because they didn't, and they didn't have enough time to let the bread rise, that's why again we can't eat chametz. That's fine. So just tell me to eat matzah. Remember, I'll just point out to you, one of the interesting things is in Mitzrayim, in Egypt, they didn't have an obligation to get rid of their chametz. You know, that's one of the interesting distinctions between what we call Pesach Mitzrayim, Pesach Doros. The first Pesach, the Jews had chametz in their homes. They had to eat matzah in addition. At the current basis, but they did not have to clean out from chametz. It's one of the differences. Says Rebbe, if you want me to remember that we left Egypt in haste, fine, I got it. Tell me to eat matzah, the symbolic bread. I understand it, but why all the craziness around chametz? He goes on. Skip down. And the truth is, says Rebbe, you know, when you think a little bit deeper, it's not just Pesach. I begin to realize that there are so many things in my Judaism that I do that I don't really understand. I don't really understand it. It's fine. Paragraph B. Look at the Rebbe writes. He says, "Rak be'emes yeshaychus gadol in yetzias Yisrael l'chol haTorah kula." Or the Chalamitz Pratei Ava on Anomavin is called Zeber Pratios. He says that, but here's what we do know. What I know is that whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu instructs me is meaningful. Whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks of me is purposeful. And whatever God instructs me to do has deeper, profound meaning. Paragraph C. Ava be'emes. Look what the Rebbe writes. Ze ikar hatikun. Shemodin lo. Shekol hashinuyim shebalayla hazos. V'chol haTorah v'hamitzvah. Hakol bishvil lahamshich aleinu ha'emuna ha'kidosha. Shegila lono berachama v'yitzias Mitzrayim. You know what's amazing, says the Rebbe? Do you know what happened on Pesach? Do you know what happened on Pesach? Klal Yisrael saw the Ribbono Shel Olam. Klal Yisrael experienced HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Pesach is a Yom Tov of Emunah. Pesach is a Yom Tov of belief. Pesach is a Yom Tov where we say, Ribbono Shel Olam, I buy into you. I subscribe to you. I love you. I devote myself to you. That's the essence of Pesach. He says, "Sha'al yidei zera inu ayin ba'ayin ki ra'i lana la'avdo ulakaba omachusa bi'ava kasher tzion adi musha." What did we see on Pesach? What we saw? We saw so many things. We saw that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's a system of justice. That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu visited the Makos. He visited the plagues upon the Egyptians. We saw that HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us and protects us and watches out for us. So on the night of Makos Bechoros, he tells us, the death of the firstborn, stay in your homes, stay with your family, I will watch over you. That's why when it comes time for redemption, he says, Ani v'lo malach, I'm going to come myself to redeem you. And when we get to the sea, he splits it for us and he provides the man for us. And during the day there was a cloud and at night there was a fire. Pesach teaches us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us. He cares about us, and he asks of us to believe in him. But it's not blind belief, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed us what he can do. HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed us what he does do. He does what he does, he did for us historically and contemporarily. Says, I'll turn the page for just a moment. Paragraph D. Aval ikar atam shel kol mitzvah pratios, ze'i efshar levayer. So says the Rebbe, we have a choice in our Judaism. If my Judaism requires, if I need to understand every single thing, if I need to understand every single mitzvah, I'm going to have a big problem in my Judaism. Because there are many things that we just don't understand. There are many things that I just don't comprehend. He says, Kimo shekasov l'chol tichla ra'isi keitz rechava mitzvosecha ma'od v'zeh ikra tshuva al she'ilas manishtana. So it says there was something amazing. So listen to what's unfolding at the Seder. My child comes to the Seder, and what does my child want to know? Manishtana halayla zemikol halaylos. Right? So my child has good, defined, mechanistic questions. I don't understand why we do these things. I don't understand why we eat matzah, not chametz. I don't understand why we're eating all different vegetables tonight, only mar. Why are we dipping? Why are we... I want you, father. I want you, mother, to tell me the reasons why we do things. And says Rebbe, what do we say to our children? My dear child, let me tell you why we do things. Avodim hayinu lepar b'mitzrayim. We were slaves. HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out. And when HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out, he showed us that he loves us. He showed us that he cares about us. And therefore, we believe in him. You want to know why we do the things that we do? It's because we have emunah. It's because we have belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Look what the Rebbe writes. V'ze ikra tshuva al she'elas manishtana. Haynu sha'anu mashivin lo avadim hayinu. Umachmas ze. Because we were slaves, What's amazingly enough is, the Rebbe says, we don't begin the Seder with an intellectual analysis of mitzvot. Meaning, again, you could answer, everyone here could answer all of these questions, right? My child asks you, why do we eat matzah? Oh, why do we eat matzah? I'll tell you. In fact, there's four different opinions among the Rishonim why we eat matzah, right? Some say this, and there's a that, and we could go the whole shir. We could do Maror Mekomos, we could do sources, we could do everything, and we'll give a whole intricate analysis. You want to know why we dip? All kidding aside, the Gemara discusses about the significance of karpas, why we dip ksonas, all different things. We could do a whole intellectual analysis. But says Rebbe, that's not how we start the Leil HaSeder. The Leil HaSeder does not start with an intellectual analysis or intellectual approach to Judaism. Instead, it starts with emunah. It starts with belief. My dear child, here's what I want to share with you. We were slaves in Egypt. We had a very difficult time. And the Ribono Shel Olam came. It was a long time. It was 210 years. And there were moments where we think he was gone. There are moments where he thought he wasn't going to redeem us. There are moments that we thought that he forgot about us. But what happened? What do we say to our children? We say, Vayotzi'enu Hashem Elokeinu Misham, Biad Chazaka Bezor Netuya. Baruch Hu took care of us. He took care of us. And my dear child, you want to hear something amazing? From that moment that he began to take care of us, he has not stopped. He has not stopped. And even though there have been some rough patches, individually, nationally, and even though there's been incredible challenges, the Ribono Shel Olam has never stopped caring about us, has never stopped loving us, has never stopped taking care of us. And look how it ends. Va'afinu kulonu chachamim, kulonu nevonim, kulonu zekenim. Aye, but one second, we're very intellectually astute. I'm very wise, I'm very smart, I'm very well-versed. Mitzvah alinu l'saper b'yitzias Mitzrayim. That tonight is not the night for analytical analysis. Tonight is the night, the Leil HaSeder is the night to work on our emunah. So after my child answers those questions, I ask those questions, I pause and I say, you know, I'm going to give you the answers to those later on. But right now, here's what I know. I know that we were slaves. I know that we were redeemed. I know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves me. I know that this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks me to do. So you want to know why we eat matzah tonight? You want to know why we eat matzah? Because the Ribono Shel Olam asked us to eat matzah. Not even commanded. He asked us to eat matzah. And if somebody who loves me so much asked me to do something, of course I'm going to do it. Do you know why we recline tonight? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu asked me to recline. That's the first answer we give to our children. Amazingly enough, I want to point out, we get to the intellectual parts later on, right? Remember again, right at the end of Magid, right before the meal, we do go through, we sum matzah ashum ma, maror ashum ma. We explain the reasons for everything. But before we get to the reasons, we try to go ahead and spend the Leil HaSeder bolstering our emunah. The Pesach Seder ultimately begins with us as parents, adults, modeling the proper emunah for our children. If we don't teach our children emunah, if we don't teach them what it means to be a believer, even when you don't understand, to be a believer, even when you can't intellectually process or analyze, then how do we ever expect our children to grasp those ideas? You know, we had an amazing Gemara in Maseches Kiddushin and Daf Yomi today. Without getting into the entire discussion of the Gemara is talking about a father's, the question the Gemara is dealing with is, does a father have the ability to marry off his minor son? It's a Shidduch crisis solution, right? Marry off your minor children. So does the father have an ability to marry off his minor son? So the Gemara says an amazing statement. The Gemara says, listen to this phrase, Mahu gadol, af bino gadol. Just like the father could only enter into marriage if he's an adult, a gadol, so too the son could only enter into marriage if he's a gadol as well. And as I was reading these words, you realize Chazal were teaching us a profound hashkafic idea as well. Everybody wants to raise righteous children, right? I've got a whole list of things that I want my kids to be. But sometimes there's one very important lesson that we forget. Mahu gadol, af bino gadol. If I want righteous children, I need to be a righteous person. If I want children who have emunah, if I want children who believe, you know, I think the greatest accomplishment of Jewish parenting is not when your child could spit back 50 reasons for why they do every single thing that they do. The greatest accomplishment of Jewish parenting is when you instill in your child a beautiful sense of emunah. I love the Ribbono Shel Olam and he loves me. So if he asks me to do something, of course I'm going to do it. Do you understand it? No, not at all. But it doesn't change the fact that I'm going to do it because we're in a relationship. Because I believe in him and he believes in me, says Rabbi Nachman, something absolutely amazing. We do answer the children's question. We just don't answer it through the prism of the intellect. We answer it through the prism of emunah. We say, my dear child, we'll get to the intellect a little bit later on. But at the end of the day, I want to teach you what it means to be a Jew. And what it means to be a Jew is to possess a deep reservoir of emunah. To believe in HaKadosh Baruch. What does it mean to believe in God? It means to believe that He loves you. To believe that He cares about you. To believe that He looks out to you. And yes, sometimes that's challenging. Because sometimes we have circumstances in life that don't make us feel loved. Or that don't seem to really portray a freeze frame of divine love. But that's what emunah is. The reason why belief is so special is because it's a struggle. The reason why belief is so important is because it doesn't come easy. Because sometimes you have to believe in things even when life doesn't seem to warrant that level of belief. That's avadim hayinu leparim. It was bad. HaKadosh Baruch Hu took care of us. He nurtured us. He held us. He loved us. That continues to this very day. And I am in love with God. And because I'm in love with the Ribbono Shel Olam, that's why I'm going to eat matzah. And because I'm in love with God, that's why I'm going to recline. And because I'm in love with God, that's why I'm going to eat mar. And because I'm in love with God, that's why I'm going to dip twice. I have no idea why. Especially about the dipping. I'll connect to the dipping. I have no idea why. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I love HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this is what I'm prepared to do. So my dear child, I hope if there's one thing I could convey to you over the course of the Seder, is my love for Hashem. And I hope that if you see my love for Hashem, maybe you'll want to cultivate your own love for Hashem. Mahu gadol, mahu gadol af b'no gadol. Maybe if I become a gadol in my emunah, I become a gadol in my belief, maybe my child will inspire you ultimately to do the same. So amazingly enough, so just as an aside, how do we cultivate this level of emunah? How do we cultivate it? So the way we cultivate it, it's amazing. I didn't put this on the sheet, but if you look at the very next section in the Haggadah, the very next section, you'll have to trust me on this. Right after Avadim Ayinu. So what do we say? Ma'aseh Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yoshua Ben Elazar Ben Azariah. There was an episode of Rabbi Yoshua Ben Elazar Ben Azariah, Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon, who were all having their seder together in Bnei Brak. They were speaking about the Exodus the whole night. Ad sheba'u tamideim va'amru lahem rabosenu, higia zman kriya shema shel shachris. And what happened until the students came along and said, Rebbe, Rebbeim, is Rabbonim, it's time to daven shachris. I know sometimes when we say this in my house, my children get a little bit nervous. Like, where are you going with this? Right? Where, how late are we going exactly? So what is the point of the story? Right? Why is this here? Why is this here? Do you know why it's here? Because you know what happened over here in Bnei Brak? What do you think? They said, well, come on, let's have the latest Seder. You know, we're Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon. We got to have the latest Seder in Bnei Brak. So what time is Shacharis? Of course not. What happened? They lost themselves in the experience. Sometimes what we miss is we make our Judaism behavioral instead of immersive. The goal of Yiddishkeit is to lose yourself in the moment, is to lose yourself in the mitzvah, to just take a step back and say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's such a privilege to serve you. And sometimes even if you don't feel it in your heart, sometimes if you just say it enough times, you begin to believe it and you begin to feel it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what it means to sit at a Pesach Seder, what it means to eat matzah, what it means to eat mara, what it means to make brachos, what it means to have a Seder, what it means to have mitzvos, what it means to have a yomtiv, what it means to be part of it. It's incredible. Such a privilege. I feel every single day like I've won the lottery. Every single day, like I can't believe I'm the luckiest person in the world. It doesn't mean that I don't have challenges. It doesn't mean I don't have difficulties. But look at all these beautiful things that I have. Kodesh Baruch Hu, you've given me the gift of being able to have a relationship with you, of being able to be in love with you, of being connected with you. That's what happened in Bnei Brak. These rabbis were sitting there, and the truth is, they just lost themselves in the experience. That's the avod of the Leil HaSeder. And especially, again, if a person has young children at home, or really true, there's any age children, or even if there are no children, even if they're just adults, have to be smart about how we structure our Pesach Seder as well. You know, you could have a very meaningful Seder even if you never open up the Haggadah. I'm not suggesting that. But if the Seder is just going to be reading through the Haggadah, Yotzei, let's eat and let's bench and let's, you know, what have I accomplished? You know, it's amazing. There's a beautiful minhag at the end of the Seder. What's the minhag at the end of the Seder? It's printed in the end. There's a minhag to say Shir HaShirim. Shir Hashirim is the love song between Klal Yisrael and Klal Yisrael. How do you know if you had a successful Seder? What's the litmus of it? If you say to yourself, I don't want it to end. I'm exhausted. I'd like to go to sleep. But you know, when you're with someone you love, you know, I often tell you know, young men and women who are going out, you know, people, how do I know it's the one? I think it's a very simple litmus test. If at the end of the date you still want to be with that person, you don't want to say goodbye, that's a pretty good indication. I mean, of course, it's very important what kind of tablecloths they use also. I'm not minimizing that. Well, the very important things that people get hung up on with shiduchim, but on a very simple level, if it's someone whose company you enjoy so much that you don't want to say goodbye at the end of the evening, you'd like to talk a little bit more, you'd like to be together a little bit more, that's the sapling of love. That's the sapling of connectedness. Shir HaShirim. Shir HaShirim is not part of the Haggadah. I don't know at what point in this you put Shir HaShirim. But that's the goal of the Seder. If you want to know what the goal is, look at the back. The back, and even if you don't say Shir HaShirim, the goal is, at least I'm not going to say it, I want to feel it. I just want to feel in love with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's how we start the Seder, and that's how we end the Seder. Avadim Hayinu is how we tell our children, my child, right now I'm going to say something to you, you might not get it, but it's okay, I want to plant the seed in your precious little head. And the seed I want to plant is that your goal is to be a Baal or Baalas Emuna. Your goal is to have beautiful, burning belief. Whether you understand the reasons or don't understand the reasons, I don't care so much about that. What I care is that you feel a connection. What I care is that you feel in love. What I care is that you feel belief. That's Avad Amir. And now to bring it full circle, now we understand, again, the meaning of this Kapitel Azo. Remember, go back just a little bit. What did Rav Hirsch say? What did Rav Hirsch say in number 8? Al Alamos Shir. So what is Rav Hirsch saying over here? There are the secrets, the mysteries of life, that which is hidden to others and can only be sensed through the ecstasy of song. What does David HaMelech say in this Kapitel HaKadosh Baruch Hu? You know what's amazing? David HaMelech says, I'm a pretty wise guy. I'm a pretty wise individual. I know a lot of stuff. But what I find amazing, says David HaMelech, is the Alamos. There are so many things I don't understand. So many things I don't understand. But you know what my response to that is? Shir. Song. You know why? Because it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if I understand it or not. It really doesn't make a difference. Because what's great is that I get to be close to you. What's great is that I get to have a relationship with you. That, to me, is what's most important. So are there many things hidden? Of course. Of course. Maybe Shlomo HaMelech understood everything because he was the wisest of all men. David says, I'm not as wise as my son. I'm just simple King David. So much stuff that's ne'alam. So much stuff that's hidden. So much stuff that's obscured. But despite that, I can still sing because it's okay not to understand when your life is bolstered and your life is anchored with a beautiful reservoir of emunah, of belief and connectedness in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's how David HaMelech Lam Natzeach, what he was trying to convey to all future generations, is when you have emunah, you're able to sing even if there are things that you don't understand. All right, we'll stop over here. Mirat Hashem will continue with this kapitel. Mirat Hashem next week.